Welcome back to Zillennials Podcast. Today on Zillennials, we have another book club. We're going to be discussing After Parties by Anthony Vaismesseau. So just to give you like a brief little overview of what this book is about and kind of how it's structured, this book follows different stories of Cambodian Americans, and it's like a bunch of short stories all kind of put together in one book.
I think we picked this book because it is Asian American Pacific Islander for the month of May. And I think what we wanted to do was highlight an author and or stories that weren't from East Asian culture, because I think while every story is important, I think we thought it was important to highlight a different Asian culture for this year's month. And I don't remember where I heard of this book, honestly. Fair Bet is probably Novel Pairings Podcast at some point, if we're being honest. And like Haley says, it's a series of short stories about Cambodian Americans, and the author himself was the son of people who fled Cambodia, and he went to Stanford and pursued his MFA at Syracuse, and that's when he wrote a lot of the stories that became part of this book.
Also, one thing that I have to say that I really liked about this book is I liked that there would just be like subtle little drops in there where it's like one story might end and it might pick up with a character from that story. And so I feel like it always had me kind of guessing, especially in the one about the wedding. I was like, who is the main character in this book? Or not in this book, in this story. And I was like, have we met them before? Because I feel like a lot of the times there would be like just little nods to things like Chuck's Donuts, which was like from the first story. And I thought that that was really fun. I really appreciated that.
Yeah, I remember because there was a story about Molly when she was younger. And then later there's a story about someone who works in like nursing and I think in the Alzheimer's wing. And then it was Molly's grandmother, I think, maybe. And then so she comes back, but she's like older and she has kids then. So I did appreciate that they were tied in.
Yes. One question I have is, do you think that, because it talked about how she had a first husband and then a second husband, so she got divorced from her first husband. I was like, I wonder if one of the husbands was her boyfriend from like back in, I feel like it was high school probably, when she showed up in the other stories.
Probably, because not to judge that guy, but I feel like that relationship was not meant to last very long, but it also seemed like the type of thing where they totally would have gotten married.
I could see it, but I thought it was like so interesting because he would like just, you know, sprinkle these bits of information in and just leave it like unanswered. It's like you kind of get to pick. What do you think happened?
So I guess on a more general note, how did you feel about these short stories as a whole? Because I know we did read, I think one was the Brian Washington.
Lot.
Yes, Lot. And I think with both sets of short stories, I personally have this weird thing where because they're all in one book, I feel like I have to read the whole thing, but I don't necessarily care about all the stories to the same level.
Yeah, I could see that. I think that there are definitely some stories that stood out more to me compared to others, just because I think that there were ones that I personally could resonate with more. Like there were ones where I had like personal connections and I'd be like, oh, or ones where I'd be like, this reminds me of like this person in my life. Comparing the two books side by side, though, I feel like I liked this one maybe a little bit better than Lot. But then again, I haven't read Lot for a year or two. So maybe if I reread it again, maybe I would change my mind. It's like the biggest non-answer ever.
That's fair, though. I mean, it's been a while since I've read Lot, too. I was just thinking, I feel like we've talked about this before, but I think I sometimes have trouble with short stories because I feel like I like getting into a story, right? And so by the time it feels like it's really picking up, it's over. And then you have to start over with a whole new setting or characters, which I think helps in this one is because they're somewhat intertwined, is that it wasn't that much of a jump. But I don't know. I felt pressure to read all of them. And I think if I wasn't reading it for the podcast, I might have just skipped the ones I wasn't interested in.
I could see that. Do you know what I have to say, though, on the topic of short stories? Is the other day I was talking with my friend Angela and my friend Kate. So if you two are listening to the podcast, hey, what's up? But I was talking to them and Angela was talking about how she was reading Ursula Le Guin's short stories, which when I saw her last year around this time, I think she was reading them. Actually, I think she transitioned to reading like other Ursula Le Guin material. But she said if we need a good story, that Ursula Le Guin is a good place to start. So I'm just throwing that out there for the book recommendations, especially if we need something in the realms of short stories, although Angela did say that she likes her normal stories better.
Is she the one that you went to the library and you got out the book once and it was super, super chunky?
Yes.
Okay.
I don't think they had her short stories, so I think I just picked up whatever they had. And then I got overwhelmed and then I did not read it. And then the loan expired and then I had to return it.
Yeah. The challenge of library books is like, it's either really great because they force you to read it and finish it on time, or you just don't actually get to finish it.
Dude, my library like will auto renew like 3 or 4 times before you have to return it. So if I don't read it within that time frame, it's kind of a me problem at that point.
That's fair. I feel like that is a decent amount of time. And on that note, I found this to be a book that took me a very long time to read. And I think it's because each story felt like something was wrapped up, and so I wouldn't feel the need to pick it back up again. And that wasn't necessarily because I didn't like it. It was just kind of like, oh, well, I don't need to pick this up because I'm not like really anxious to find out what happens next.
Yeah, I feel like also in a similar note, I feel like a lot of the stories were a little more like dense in the way that like it had some like heavier material in it, where it's just like the stories, generally speaking, were not very happy stories. Like they were very serious for the most part.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think there was some very interesting commentary in it, I think. Like I noticed too, is sometimes in some of the stories how he named people, like how certain characters were named and other characters weren't. Or there was the one story, I think it was the Super King's Son, where there was this one character who was kind of from like a more upper class family. His family was like, his father was a pharmacist or something. And so he was named like, I think it was like Daniel or something like that.
Was it Daniel or was it Justin?
It could have been Justin. I don't know. I'm just going generic like dude names. But it was so interesting because the rest of the students in the book on the badminton team, they were kind of named based on like their parents' profession almost, like Super King's Son.
Yes. That was like what they were known as or like their nickname. And I don't know, when I was reading this book and there were all of these characters who were not necessarily named, it almost made me wonder if maybe like this was a story that had come from like his personal life or his personal experience or someone else's around him. And he was just like, I want to tell this story or like a version of this story where I just feel like it's weird to put a name with this person because they're based on somebody that I know or somebody else knows maybe.
That's fair. I feel like they could always just change the name, you know, like pick a random one, but I don't know. I feel like this is when, if you were in English class, they would really love dissecting this.
True.
Like, why did he name this character? But also, if you think about it, for that story specifically, the characters that weren't named, their families seemed to come from like a lower economic class.
Yes.
At least based on their jobs. And so I was wondering if it was kind of a commentary on like the class dynamics.
Yeah, where it's like your parents would kind of be known by, or like your kids would kind of be known by like what their parents did, unless you had a really nice job, like a cushy job.
Yeah.
I could see that.
That was one story where it first started, I was like, I don't really like it, but I think it kind of growed. It's late. I think it kind of grew on me.
I agree. I think when it first started, I wasn't completely sold on it. And then I realized it was about badminton. And then I was like, wait, I like badminton. And then I was like, okay, I like this story.
I don't know if I've ever played badminton. I mean, personally, hand-eye coordination sports are not my strong suit.
I used to play badminton in high school, but I was so horrendous that I made the freshman team and definitely did not make the team the next year.
But if you had fun, that's what matters.
Yeah, it was a good time. I really enjoyed it.
So I am looking through some of my notes. Okay, so there was the one story where the dad's working in the, it's called the shop, and the dad's working at a like a car shop, and how there's that super rich woman whose wife's a doctor, who now I'm wondering if he's Justin slash whoever the kid's name is, like that family. I have no idea. But I thought it was so, like, is that like, I don't know. I just thought it was an interesting story to read when the son is like, oh, I'm gay. And then the woman who's coming to get her car fixed is like, yeah, but like, go marry this person, get her a green car, and then you can be gay afterwards. And I was just kind of like, I don't think that's how it works.
Yeah, that was kind of how I felt about that too. I was like, I feel like that's not really comfy. It kind of reminded me of, so this is like kind of tangential and potentially might be a little bit like, I don't know, maybe a little problematic, maybe not, but I can tell this story anyways. So I had this aunt, right, who never married, but she had this dear friend who was gay. And occasionally, this was like, I don't know, probably back in the 70s, the 80s, sometime around then. And I remember that her friend who was gay would go on business trips. And the thing is, like, it was not very smiled upon to be gay in some of these countries that he would visit, especially in those times. And so he would bring my aunt with him. And so they would be like travel companions. So she would get to go travel the world, and he would just be like, yeah, you're like my plus one. And so it kind of reminded me of that, but also, except in this other story, I feel like it was way more manipulative. Yes.
But I think it has similar undertones to the whole, like the having to hide kind of who you really are, or have like other people be like, yeah, like in the story in the book where the person's like, yeah, I get it, I don't care that you're gay, but like you should do this thing for your greater Cambodian family first, and bring this person to America, and like once you serve your like duty, then you can go do what you want.
I mean, like, I feel like if she knew he was gay and she was like, I'm just in it for the green card, it'd be like, all right, you got an understanding. That's no problem. But if she had no idea, then I feel like it might be a little different.
Also, the fact that it's illegal to marry for a green card.
Oh yeah, that too.
Yeah, marriages for green cards, I think, are just like invalid.
I could see that. That makes sense.
Is there any story that you would like to talk about?
Yeah. So what did you think about the marriage story where like so many people were like not named? I feel like half the people were named and the other half the people in the story were not named.
Oh, to be honest, I don't think I finished that one because I got bored. Because these are my notes. It's called We Could Have Been Princes, I think, because my three bullet points for that was takes place in the context of a wedding. Two, people's names slash professions are in all caps. Three, DNF, did not finish.
So let me fill in some of the gaps that you may have. Essentially, Marlin, one of the characters, gets in a fist fight brawl with like one of the, I think it was like his uncle at the wedding, because his uncle was saying things that were, that was, it, he was pretty much saying something along the lines of like, the difference between you and I is that I'm smart and I know that to be successful in life, you have to be a winner, and to be a winner, you have to like take advantage of pretty much everyone around you and not care that the other people are losing. And I don't know, I was just like, that's like, it really made me think because I was like, I wonder if this is how like bigger corporations and whatnot think about it. Is it's like, well, to be a winner in life, you have to make sure that you're like giving other people something that's not good to work with. Like, for example, he gave, I think he gave the example of like people coming to work on his farm and paying them a certain wage, but then profiting so like so much more, like 10 times over based on what he was paying them for their wage.
I did not read the full story, but I think there's some people see the world through a very zero-sum game mentality. And it's like, if I don't get something, it means somebody else got it. If I'm not very articulate tonight. Okay. So like, you know, the whole, oh, if this is good for me, I can't also make it good for someone else, which I feel like is not a very great way to think. Because I feel like there has to be something in which both people can like benefit. But maybe I'm just an overly optimistic person in that regard. I don't know.
I think there also has to be like a balance, you know? It's kind of like the other day I saw this, and you should definitely do your own research, because I only saw this on social media in like a fun little TikTok video, which is not a credible source, FYI. In case you were wondering.
In case anybody needed to be told.
It was actually like a TikTok of this podcast where they were talking about how millionaires and billionaires are like, yeah, I'm not passing like any of my wealth down to my kids. And I think it was talking about Bill Gates specifically. And they had said like in an interview, it was initially he had said, yeah, I'm not passing my wealth down to my kids. And then he said, I'm only passing $10 million down to each of my kids. But then, which I was like, okay, but $10 million, like, let's be honest, it's way more than like most people are ever going to inherit. Like, or possibly even earn in your lifetime. Let's be real. But then they also went on to talk about like, yeah, it was really ironic though, because like his daughter has like a, I'm making up numbers now, but I know it was a lot, like a $24 million penthouse in New York City. And they were like, and how did she get this penthouse? She did marry rich, but her name is on the deed. Or so they think. Also like how she got married at like a horse farm that her dad bought for her for like $76 million. And it's in her name. And so they were like, so they say that they're not passing on their wealth, but like, come on. Like, you do stuff like that. I don't know. So it just made me think about like how people, instead of necessarily always working to spread around what they have or to work on balancing what people have, sometimes look at it like, I earned this and I'm going to, you know, make sure it stays within my family, etc.
Yeah, I think kind of related, but on a slightly different topic, is there's a lot of intergenerational wealth transfer that isn't necessarily in the form of like, here's a check.
Yeah.
And I think the typical way people think about it is like, oh, like, what's the giant check someone inherits? But I feel like there's other ways to do it as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which I feel like, you know, like, if you did well and you want to, like, give your children certain things, like, I don't think there's anything inherently wrong with that.
I think so, too. And I think that also in this book, like, they did talk a lot about how a lot of the people in this book were, like, not always of like a super high socioeconomic class. And I think that with that being said, it's like you wonder, because a lot of them came over here as immigrants, right? When there was like a genocide going on, is what it sounded like. And it makes you wonder like how hard, like it just makes you think, I guess, about how hard it is if you're somebody who comes over here and has to leave a lot behind.
Yeah, I think this kind of relates into the first story, The Three Women of Chuck's Donuts, which I personally think was probably my favorite out of them. But with that story, it's like these two like teenage and preteen daughters who are working in the donut shop in the overnight shift because the mother got divorced and there's no child care. And so what do? You bring the kids to the donut shop. And the older daughter, who I think was taking community college classes, is like writing this paper for her philosophy class. And she also makes commentary about her dad, who's like saying things like, oh, you're so like Khmer, or like you're not, or like, oh, in like we didn't have ice cubes, like you're not a real, like, quote, real Cambodian, Or then he'd be like, oh, like you eat this food that we eat. You're such a Cambodian. And I think that part can probably resonate to anybody who has had, whether they themselves or someone in their family has come from a different country, where you get a lot of, oh, like you're not a real ex because you don't do this thing. Or like, oh, you're such an ex because you do that thing.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me too about like when people talk about like, oh, you're not like this specific ethnicity because you're only 10%. You know what I mean? And it's like, that's not true. Like that's, I feel like for a lot of people, that's like an erasure of a part of their identity. And I feel like that's not okay for people to say like, you're not this because you're like X amount percent. You know, because like for some people, it may be like, hey, that's not really a big part of who I am. But for other people, it might be.
I think it also depends culturally what you're raised in, because like, let's say you maybe are only 10% of this, but maybe you're more close with that side of your family.
Mm-hmm.
So I also thought it was interesting because they were observing this man who would come in and order a donut and not eat it. And they eventually talk to him and they ask him, like, basically, like, what are you? And so his family is, like, originally from China, but they, like, he was from Cambodia, like, geographically. And so the kids were asking him, like, well, do you speak Cambodian? Do you celebrate, like, their New Year? And then he's like, yes, yes, yes. And he's like, oh, but I'm Chinese. I'm not Cambodian. And I thought it was interesting. It is on page 22 where they said, what's the difference between a Chinese family in Cambodia and a Khmer family living in Cambodia? Aren't they both Cambodian if they both speak the language? They both survived the same experiences. And I feel like you sometimes get that a lot here
mm-hmm.
in the United States as someone who has immigrated, where it's like, what is a real American?
Yeah.
Because if you grow up here and you have the same experiences as your peers, but then you're still somewhat seen as an outsider.
Mm-hmm. I could definitely see that, yeah.
Okay, this is like kind of pivoting, but it's like kind of funny in the sad funny way when they're talking about how the mother named the donut shop Chuck's Donuts because she thought it was like generic American name that would get people to come to the donut shop.
Yep, I also thought the same thing. I was like, definitely a sad funny moment. But I feel like, okay, I feel like a lot of the stories in this book did touch a lot on, like, identity and race and ethnicity and, like, rolled it up into all these stories. So I feel like it was very interesting in that respect where it's, like, you have a lot of different perspectives. And I feel like you also got the perspectives of people whose stories are not always told.
Yeah.
Like, I know there were probably one or two stories about, like, gay men too, and I thought that was also a good thing to have, just because I feel like a lot of the times those stories aren't necessarily told.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think also in general they're not told, and I think also for, say, an Asian gay man, I think there is something to be said about like seeing yourself in the books you read and the movies you see. And it doesn't mean like you have to have the same ethnicity or whatever to relate to something.
So what were your, like, overall feelings about this book? How'd you feel about it?
I thought it was good. I think there were some really important discussion points that could come up with this. I think, you know, if it's guided and you picked certain ones, maybe upper high school or at least college, you could use some of these stories for, like, an English class. I do say that, for me personally, a lot of these stories have been published independently, and I think you can probably access them that way. So I don't know if you necessarily need to read the book.
True.
Or on the flip side is you could sample those ones first.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that. Yeah, because I did notice that when I was like going through the little acknowledgments at the back of the book, it was like, oh, and this one was published here and this one was published here and this one was published here. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. I didn't know that they were published there and then kind of compiled into one book.
So I think for me personally, like maybe would recommend specific stories, but I don't know if I'd necessarily recommend the whole book.
Yeah, I feel like it'd be good to do certain stories, or alternatively, like, to break it into sections, if that makes sense. I mean, it's already sectioned, it's short stories, but to be like, all right, this month I'm going to do 3 stories, and then 3 months from now I'm going to do 3 stories, just because I feel like it is a book that is a little bit heavier, where it's like, I don't know. For some of the stories, I feel like it was kind of more of like a close reading experience, where it's like I wanted to go back and really take the time to read through it and like examine it. And then also, I feel like some of the stories, like, there wasn't a ton of like humor, I felt like, in these stories. Like, they were very serious. And so I think that to read them all in one collective block can be a little bit much. I think it's like you might want to break them up and like do 3 one month and then 3 the next month, just to kind of spread them out with your normal reading regimen.
I was going to say that I do sometimes have problems with short stories because of like the semi-disjointed nature. But I think, like you're saying, with something that is more heavy reading, it can lend itself very well to the type of situation you were describing, because it's a short story, you don't need to necessarily read it back to back to back.
Mm-hmm. But I would recommend reading them all at least within the same year, just because a lot of them do have relating characters. So I think that that would be something that you'd get the most out of it. Or honestly, I'd say within 6 months of each other, just because otherwise I feel like you might miss that, like, oh, I read this story and so-and-so is in this story and now they're in this one. So I think you have to read it within like a time span, but like you can spread it out still.
I think for me, it's kind of embarrassing. I think it took me a couple months to read this book, to be honest. And that was because I would just take gaps in between them. Mm-hmm. I guess it depends what you want out of the reading experience, because I think each story seems independent enough that you could read it without remembering everything. But I think, like you said, it's a little fun when you recognize the characters from earlier.
Yeah, or I mean, you could just read them all independently and just take a couple notes and be like, main characters, so-and-so and so. Brief summary, XYZ. And then when you go to the next story, you can be like, oh, I remember this person from this.
Yeah. I know this book got a lot of praise. I think for me personally, the message of the book was more important / like better executed than necessarily the writing.
Yeah, I could see that. I think it was overall, like, I'd recommend it to people. I don't think it'd be at the top of my list of recommendations, but I do think I'd recommend it to people. I think it's also like you have to be in a certain like headspace to read this book. And I think that like if you're going through a tough time right now, this might not be what you need. And that's okay. But if you're also like, I'm going through a tough time and I need a book where people are also going through tough times, then you might like it. Thank you for joining us. Our next book club is going to be Blue Skinned Gods by S.J. Sindhu, and that will be dropping on June 5th.
Hope you enjoyed our discussion on after parties. Love to hear what your favorite story was, what you thought of the book, and so feel free to send us an email at millennialspodcast@gmail.com or DM us on Instagram @millennialspodcast, and don't forget to rate and review Millennials Podcast on Apple Podcasts.